don't have to look far around the sanctuary to know that this is a season of light. And for me, it's one of my favorite things about the season, is just sort of taking in all the lights, whether it be simply driving to church this morning. I left my house in Annapolis about 5:45, and I drove to the town, which is sort of empty, but all of the lights are still on, the businesses, and all the decorations are there. And I love driving home late at night now. I'm teaching a class, an Advent class, and I come home late, and I drive to the town. I get to take in all of those lights. It's just beautiful. Many of us were hoping to see the light parade down in Annapolis last week, but sadly, because of a tragic fire, that was postponed. And I was hoping to have some new pictures of all of the lights on the boats as they make their way up and down Spa Creek. How many of you have been part of those festivities at some point, either to spectate or not? So I have to settle for one of my favorite boat pictures of last year from the light parade. This was the Christmas Story boat, and it says Fragile, and I'll triple dog dare you. And there's the complete with the leg lamp, and in the daytime you could also see that it says, you'll shoot your eye out. You'll shoot your eye out. And so that sat in the Annapolis Harbor long after the lights parade last year. We did get to see a few of the boats that were already decorated for the boat parade, and so they did make their way around the harbor. We had friends visiting with us last week for that. I was with a friend this week. We had dinner on Thursday night, and he was talking about how he just loves to still go for rides, and he can't get anyone to go with him. He used to get his kids to go with him when they were little, but no one will go with him anymore. He still just goes out and rides, looks around at lights. Any of you like to do that tradition? Just go and find the lights where they are. In our culture, lights have become sort of a competitive game of sorts. There is a TV show, The Great Christmas Light Fight. How many of you have ever seen it? I'm not necessarily recommending it. I'm just telling you it's out there. In the great light fight, it's actually pits neighbors against neighbors to figure out who can come up with the best, most over-the-top light display. Now, I apologize if anyone's home actually looks like this. I'm not trying to critique amazing scenes, just over-the-top. More stuff on that per square inch in all of those yards. Now, personally, I'd prefer a house like that. I like sort of understated light. Light in the windows, light sort of beckoning you in. I received a Christmas card this week from one of my former members of a church up in Reisterstown. I was there, and a very simple card. It was sort of like a Courier and Ives card, but it was an electronic card. So it got to unfold before me, and the family goes on a little sleigh ride, like they're going on a sleigh ride to grandma's house, and every time in the place they move a little bit farther forward, a light goes on in a window. The light just sort of follows them all along the way. I love the lights. Now, if you are native to the Baltimore area, of course, you know that they know how to do lights up in Baltimore, don't they? And they call it what? They call it the miracle of 34th Street. How many of you have been to Hamden to see the lights in Hamden? No, you need to get out more. This is just up the road, folks. Ron and Betty Brown will show you around. They'll show you the area. Yeah, that's right, every year. So it's this one block of these row houses in 34th Street, and amazing displays. Holly and I were there last night after my alma mater had gotten crushed by Maryland. We were in town for the Maryland, and I had to live with the taunting of my brother-in-law who went to Maryland. But these were some of the displays that were there. Not surprisingly, Yoda showed up this year. And, of course, it's very, very Maryland. There are the crabs, and there's... But it's beautiful, beautiful, all on both sides of the street. And you can see the hubcap tree that's been made. Very unique kind of thing. And there are some of the porches you can go up on and actually look in. We went up on one of the porches, stood in line for a long time, beautiful display. You can look in, you see the Christmas tree inside was going around. And on the couch was the guy just lying there watching TV. I kid you not, sort of probably the busiest Saturday night of the whole season. He's just in there lying watching TV. But his front door was open, so I guess we were invited to look. I love the bicycle wheels that were turned into lawn ornaments, if you will. Just beautiful, crowded, beautiful crowds last night. There's Santa in a motorcycle sleigh. This is the Natty Bow house, and some of the films have been made in Maryland and House of Cards. This was from the artist, and on their tree were crabs and Old Bay seasoning, and this is an amazing scene. So I would encourage you, if you get it's up through January, if you get a chance to get up there and see it, It's amazing lights. I love putting up the lights on my house. It's like one of my favorite days of the year is putting up the lights, except, you know, battling the ones that don't work, that's not so much fun. But once you get them up, I just love that feeling. And one of my saddest days, and I always have to wait till after Epiphany. Holly wants to take everything down a little sooner than I might, but I let them up till after Epiphany, and it's one of the saddest days when I finally have to take down the Christmas lights. I just hate that. Now, it's not surprising that we should be so drawn to light during this season. After all, the people of God have been looking and using the language of light to describe God's presence, to describe God's guidance, to describe God bringing salvation to the world. We heard those words from the prophet Isaiah in the ninth chapter. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light, and on them a light has shone. And then it goes on to talk about, for unto us a son is given, unto us a child is born, and the government shall be upon his shoulders. His name shall be called what? Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting King. We sort of hear the echoes of the Messiah as those words ring out to us, don't they? Now, when Isaiah is writing these words, the people of Israel, the northern kingdom, is about to fall and be taken into captivity by the Assyrians. So it's not clear if it comes right before the fall, right after the fall. But it's a perilous time in their political history. And they are feeling squashed, in any event, by the Assyrians, this dominating power that's sort of taken over. And so they have this vision, Isaiah has this vision, about one day a ruler on the distant horizon is going to rise up and lead them home. And lead them back into what they knew as their nation before, where they would not be oppressed by anyone. And so it is this vision of a Messiah, a political figure who was going to come and bring them their salvation. Now, the Christians took up this image, not surprisingly, when they think about the life of Jesus, this distant light on the horizon. It was centuries later, many centuries later, when this comes to fulfillment, really, in its fullness. When God sends Jesus to the world, the people who walk in darkness have seen a great light. A child is born to us. A child is given. Now, some of you know this scene. 5 years ago, the world watched with restless anticipation and with hopefulness as a mine had collapsed in Chile and 33 miners were stranded down below. Deep, deep down below this precious metals mine. At first, they weren't sure if anyone had survived. This is August 5th, 2010. And then very quickly, there were some little noises that came up from the ground. Clear that there were some who were trying to communicate. All the normal channels of communication had been taken away. All of the exits had been blocked. This massive rocks had fallen and sort of collapsed in on it. The mine had collapsed in on itself. The group had gotten to a sort of a safe place of refuge, and there they were below the earth, wondering if they would ever be rescued. And those on the top were wondering if they would ever get to them. But early on, there was enough signs of hope that there might be a few of them. 17 days into the rescue efforts, finally they broke through, and there was the first sign that there were people on the top looking after them. And so when this drill breaks through into the mine shaft, can you imagine the ecstasy and the delight of those miners who were living on 2 days' rations of food that had been spread over those 17 days? And now here clearly their salvation was coming. Their rescue was at hand. The distant star was right out there. The hard part was it was still a distant star, because that was just one little poke of light through the darkness, one little sliver of water that was coming down. They attached messages back up to the people at the surface. Some of them were letters to loved ones and to let them know that they were okay. But one of the most poignant was this. I'm going to try my Spanish out here. It's not very good. Estamos bien, el refugio, los 33. We are all well, the 33. It's at that moment that they knew that all 33 miners had survived. So now there was a communication that went on over those next days and weeks, and they were able to get medicine down, they were able to get food down, and But they were not able to get them out immediately because the shaft was too small. So they had to dig down deeper and wider, and it took months, 69 days in total that they were down there. And they had to live by this hope of this distant star that the rescue was really coming on the horizon. They sent a message up and they said, well, we'll be out by Liberation Day, which in Chile was the middle of September. And they said, no, not by Liberation Day, hopefully by Christmas. Hopefully by Christmas. They weren't sure how quickly they were going to be able to get down there. Well, the efforts proved to be fruitful. They finally got, they bore the larger tunnel, and the world watched because it was sort of announced. We all knew when it was going to happen, when they anticipated bringing out the first miners. How many of you tuned in to see that live on TV? I know I did. I was following that story. And we got to sort of see it again. The film came out this fall, The 33, which tells this story, that dramatic moment when that drill bit first comes through, and the dramatic moment when they rise up out of the ground, and there's cheering and reunions, and there is hope, and there is salvation. I picture the Christmas story sort of like this. The Christmas story is God boring down into our darkness, boring down into a place where we feel trapped and alone, wondering if there's anybody up there who cares. And God sending in the form of a child. His name shall be called Emmanuel, which means God with us. God is with us. Robert Louis Stevenson, the writer, many of you know from his work Treasure Island and other books, when he was a young child, he was pretty sickly. So he was in bed much of the time. He had a nurse taking care of him. And it was the middle of winter. And the nurse came in one day to his room and found him sort of with his nose plastered against the frosty window, looking out, and she was trying to scurry him back into bed because she didn't want him to get any sicker, and he just would not leave the window. And when she came over, she saw what he was looking at. He said, look, look at that man punching holes in the darkness. He was watching the lamplighter go along the street and one by one light up the street, punching holes in the darkness. We have a God who punches holes in the darkness. A God who comes to us. A God who breaks through to our world, breaks through to our lives, and reminds us that there is hope and we are loved. A couple of weeks ago, I had one of the hardest things I've ever been asked to do as a pastor. I was invited to be with the family of Ellie Lakin and to be part of her service that took place at the temple over in Arnold. Ellie Lakin was the junior from Severna Park High School who had taken her own life. And I learned about it through a member of our church. I also learned about it from her grandfather, who was my predecessor at Bethesda United Methodist Church. So I'd known Ellie since she was a little kid. Her family was active there for a little while they still lived over in the Rockville area. And I had baptized her younger sister. I knew her older brother, Jordan. And so when I got the news that she had died, it was just terrible and heart-wrenching. And Wayne's a good friend of mine, has been a colleague for years. And to see him and his wife, Polly, and her daughter, Sherry and Larry, who were just so crushed by the loss of their daughter, it was just a painful, painful week. But I had the painful privilege of helping to tell the story of her life and speaking at the service, sharing the memorial service with the rabbi over there, who was the most gracious. And after I told the story about Ellie's life, and Ellie was full of life, really. She was one of those kids who was artistic, she was creative, she was bright, she was funny, she had a lot of friends. But she also carried with her a deep pain that no one knew about, including her parents, including her closest friends. And it was only discovered after the fact, that with a journal that she had left, that how much that darkness had surrounded her. And so there I was, trying to make sense of it and trying to speak a word of hope into this place. And so one of the things that I said to everybody gathered there was that we had read a lot of Psalms that day, a shared prayer book for Jews and Christians alike. And we had read words about crying out to God in our pain and also giving God thanks. And the Psalms invite us to name our deepest fears and our deepest hopes, to put all of those things together side by side in our prayers. And I said, maybe the Psalms will guide us through this. Maybe they'll be our path to praying through this grief. And then I also reminded everyone that we were going to hurt for a long time. There's no way to get over a loss like this easily. I use this a quote by Anne Lamott, who describes, you know, when she describes losing someone is like when you break a leg and the leg heals, but it doesn't heal quite all the way. It heals most of the way. And so when the weather gets cold, you sort of still feel it in your joint a little bit there, and you have to limp just a little bit. And she says, but you learn to move on, and you will get through this, and you'll learn to dance with a limp. You'll learn once more to dance with a limp. The limp reminds you of the person that you lost, and the limp reminds you that things will never be the same, but you get through it, and you dance with a limp. But the thing I really wanted to say, to the teenagers especially, was if you are feeling the darkness descending, there is a star out there on the horizon. You have parents and you have friends and you have teachers and you have counselors and you have pastors and you have rabbis. If you're carrying a deep, dark pain, share it with someone. Let someone in. Let someone bore a shaft of light into that pain for you, because they will love you even if you're not feeling very lovable. And then finally, the thing I said was, I was asked to not be too Jesus-y. I was in the temple, after all. But I said, in the Christian tradition, we were at the beginning of Advent. And I said, we're in a season where we name God as Emmanuel, a good Hebrew name for God, which means God is with us. And I said, so in this season, when we light candles in Jewish homes, and when we light candles on Christian altars, all of the light reminds us of God's presence, of God's hope and God's peace, and even God's joy in the middle of this pain, because God is Emmanuel, God with us. God is with us. I want to leave you with a blessing from Jan Richardson. It's called Where the Light Begins. Perhaps it does not begin. Perhaps it is always. Perhaps it takes a lifetime to open our eyes, to learn to see what has forever shimmered in front of us. The luminous line of the map in the dark, the vigil flame in the house of the heart, the love so searing we cannot keep from singing, from crying out in testimony and in praise. Perhaps this day will be the mountain over which the dawn breaks. Perhaps we will turn our face toward it, toward what has been always. Perhaps our eyes will finally open in ancient recognition, willingly dazzled, illuminated at last. Perhaps this day, perhaps this day the light begins in us. God in us. God with us. May that be your experience this day. And through the rest of the Advent season and into Christmas, his name shall be called Emmanuel, which means God is with us, this distant star that's come close. Amen.